he judged it time to rise. It was still dark. The winter days were short indeed on the islands, and one became accustomed to doing what must be done by lamplight. She made up the fire. She brewed tea, but could not drink it. She swept the floor, made dough for bannocks, fed Rona's scrawny chickens. Then she packed her little bag with the few possessions she had brought from home, and sat waiting for the old woman to wake. "I'm leaving this morning," she said as soon as Rona was sitting up on her pallet, steaming cup in hand. "I've made your breakfast, and his. You'll need to take it to him. I have to catch the tide."
"I see."
Rona sipped at her tea, pebble grey eyes sharp on her student. "I thought it was tomorrow Kinnart was coming. I've changed my mind. Mother needs me."
"And the big fellow doesn't. Your mother doesn't know one day from another, that's what I've heard. Why the rush?"
"I thought you didn't care if he lived or died," Nessa said in exasperation. "This is hard enough without you arguing the point.
It's not him I care about, it's you, child. Why lose a day if you don't have to? Why rush off home if you don't want to?"
Nessa pressed her lips together. She would not cry again. She was behaving like a silly girl, and not the priestess she was.
"What do I tell him?" asked Rona quietly.
"Nothing." Rona looked at her.
"Tell him I've gone home because my mother needs me. It's the truth. I was foolish to spend so long here. I can't imagine why I... Just say that. I'll come back and see you as soon as I can, Rona. I hope you'll be safe."
Nessa took up her small pack and put it over her shoulder. Already she wore her light cloak and boots. Her outer cloak, the warm one, was still in the cairn, and she was not going to fetch it.
"What happened, Nessa?"
"Nothing. I have to go now or I'll miss the tide. Farewell. Be careful. I'll be back as soon as I can get away."
Nessa bent to kiss the old woman's wrinkled cheek.
You might have to watch him."
She could not stop herself from blurting this out, and Rona's eyes narrowed sharply.
"I think he might... I'm worried that he might try to..."
She could not bring herself to put it into words.
"Oh, yes."
Rona pursed her lips.
"But you're still off and away without another word."
"I think I'm only making things worse," Nessa whispered,
and turned away and went out into the morning, blinking hard. The sun was struggling up, the wind was fresh from the west, full of the sharp scent of the ocean. One of the dogs stood waiting for her by the cold remnants of the outdoor fire, ears pricked, head up, alert as if on guard. Her heart like a leaden weight in her breast, Nessa turned her back on the tower in the earth and set her steps for home. Her mother needed her. Her uncle needed her. The folk were in peril. She must be with them, not here. She'd been foolish to think this might end in good. She'd never misread the signs before, but this time she must have been wrong. She would put this behind her. She would not even think of it, of him. Of him waking alone and finding she was gone. Of him knowing she'd run away. Of him walking into the sea and swimming steadily westward until the waves swallowed him, or wandering off across the winter hills and into cold oblivion. By the ancestors, the pain in her heart was fierce indeed. And yet there was the axe, fresh from the killing of a child, the axe that had slain and slain again, swinging in final bloody judgment through years of heedless service to the god. That was alien. That was unthinkable. Tears began to fall, and this time she let them flow, hot and painful. For the only one who could see her was the dog, padding steadily and silent beside her, all the way home to the whaleback.
Chapter 8
Summerled had a certain style. When at last he came, he strode across the narrow causeway in his billowing cloak and braid-edged tunic. His dark hair held neat by a red silk ribbon, and his men marched behind him with their burnished helms and their fine, sharp weapons. It was noted that this new chieftain bore a round shield, fresh painted with a black horse on a red ground. It seemed he was not displeased with the name his comrades had bestowed on him. Kinnart cursed under his breath, hands white-knuckled on his spear. The men of the folk discussed the range of their bows, and whether they might pick one fellow off cleanly among so many. But Angus said, let them come. Now was the time for diplomacy, not assassinations. He had invited Somerled to make a treaty, and Somerled had come. It was a little late, maybe, since the winter was almost over. But at least the man was here. They must assemble in the hall and hear what he had to say. Before, the women would have been excluded from such a gathering. In particular, Angus had not wanted his nieces on show. But it was different now. The sickness and a season of fighting had decimated the folk and weakened their resolve. Now the king wanted Nessa by him, as royal princess and wise woman of his household. Her presence would moderate his own men's behavior, and Kinnart's in particular. It would take but one rash outburst to destroy this slender chance of peace. They waited. Nessa sat on Angus's right, Kinnart on his left. Tige, newly arrived from Holy Island, stood behind. The men of the household were all gathered there, spears and knives to hand, their faces a study in anger, resentment, frustration, fear. They were weary. They were sick at heart, yet they were not without hope. For why else would the fellow come here, save with an overture of peace? Nessa felt Somerled's eyes on her the moment he entered the hall. The nightmare came to her, the cutting, the falling, the hand sweeping with confidence across the board. Oh dear. Now those same dark eyes travelled up and down her body, assessing, admiring, and a little smile played on his lips. He seated himself opposite Angus and folded his hands together on the table. He wore a fine silver ring, wrought with the heads of strange beasts and set with gleaming red stones.
King Angus, he said pleasantly. It has been a long time. I trust you've been well.
Tige's voice was steady, translating.
I am well, thank you, and I hope you are likewise, though it seems a strange question to ask in view of what has occurred, the king said gravely. It cannot be unknown to you what losses we have suffered at the hands of your warriors this winter. You must forgive me if I am blunt, but we had hoped for better after the promises your brother made. Have you forgotten the words Elf spoke at the Great Stone of Oaths?
Ah, said Somerled. Straight down to business, then. I like that. No point in beating about the bush, is there? You think me forgetful. You misjudge me. I never forget. I do not forget my brother's murder. I do not forget that your folk burned one of my warriors alive with his woman and children by him. I do not forget their brazen attempt to ambush our settlement, nor the many times they have carried their spears and bows onto my lands with no purpose but to stir up trouble. You speak of promises. Those promises were invalid the moment your folk laid hands on Ulf.
Nessa felt the anger that ran through every one of the king's men as they heard these words translated. Angus's jaw tightened. Kinnart's eyes blazed with fury. As for Somerled, he sat calmly, hands relaxed before him, expression bland. He could have been speaking of a fine day's fishing, or discussing what to have for supper.
I wish to speak of this before, soon after your brother's untimely death, Angus said, keeping his voice steady. You made that difficult. I understand your grief, your anger at what occurred. It is not easy to lose one so close.
If you say so.
But your information is wrong. My men did not kill your brother. We respected him, we admired what he did, and were grateful for his help. I had come to regard Ulf as a friend. I must tell you I have made extensive inquiries. I have spoken personally to every one of my men who travelled the High Island that day, and to all who lived in the settlement there. Whoever murdered your brother, it was not one of the folk.
What are you suggesting? That one of our own would carry out such a barbarous act?
I suggest nothing. I simply point out these accusations are false. So are those concerning the death of the widow Ara and her man. It is not the way of the folk to carry out hall burnings. We do not kill children. For that, too, you must look closer to home for a culprit.
Where's your evidence?
Someone had raised his brows.
Where is yours?
Angus's voice had an edge to it now, as if he maintained control with some difficulty.
And what of the slayings at Ramsbeck? A rout so savage there was little left of our men but shattered bone and bloody crow-pickings. What kind of a warrior fights like that? As if death itself cannot satisfy his lust for blood, but he must gouge and pierce and crush until he makes his opponent no more than a lump of carrion. That was the act of madmen.
He glanced at Nessa, as if remembering her presence too late.
I'm sorry, my dear.
Your men attacked us, Summerled had said. And I, too, suffered losses that day. Two men killed, and another missing. My finest fighter, my personal bodyguard. Slain, I presume, or he would have made his way home by now, since no prison is strong enough to hold this particular warrior. Where is Eivind? Does his corpse lie rotting untended on your land? He was my dearest friend, my companion since childhood. It is as if two brothers have been torn from me. Now I cannot even lay his bones in earth. I cannot bid him farewell. Your men have done this.
A flicker of real emotion passed over his pale, impassive features, and was gone. Nessa shivered.
I know nothing of this, Angus said. We carried home only the broken remains of our own. We saw no such warrior in that place, dead or alive. I will make inquiries for you. Nobody will deny you the right to lay your friend to rest, no matter what he has done, no matter what he was.
Thank you. And now to business. I cannot stay long,
Summerled had said, leaning back and folding his arms.
I'm hoping we can reach some sort of agreement today, so my visit won't have been for nothing. We're busy men.
Your words hearten me, Angus said cautiously. I too wish for a treaty, perhaps a renewal of that I struck with Lord Ulf. We might discuss initial terms here, and the details in private. I'm grateful for this opportunity. Indeed, I would have welcomed it earlier.
Really?
Someone had raised his brows again. Nessa watched him and felt the dream, dark as a shadow, lingering somewhere in her mind. He looked so affable, so confident, so relaxed. It was the look of a man who sees no possibility of failure.
Most certainly, Angus replied. And we have a gift for you in token of our goodwill. There have been some difficulties between us since your brother died. We offer this small treasure as a gesture of amity, a symbol of our desire to begin afresh. These are old and quite rare, the only examples of their kind.
Angus gestured to one of his men, who brought out a box fashioned cunningly from carven whalebone, a fine piece that had lain long in the king's storehouse, awaiting such a moment. Any monarch worth his salt must keep ready a supply of goods suitable to please a dangerous neighbour, a visiting dignitary, a chieftain who might turn from loyal friend to bitter enemy on the merest whim. Such gifts are an essential part of diplomacy. Angus lifted the hinged lid to display the gleaming set of silver spoons that lay within, gracefully curving implements each fashioned in the shape of a diving dolphin. It was a gift of considerable charm. The workmanship was without equal. Nessa had heard her uncle say so when he took them out of storage, on the chance that this difficult chieftain might at last come to the bargaining table.
Exquisite, some had remarked. Delightful. Quite outside the usual.
He was not looking at the spoons.
Introduce me to the young lady, will you?
He snapped his fingers, and one of the big fur-cloaked warriors came forward to clasp the box shut and take it under his arm. Wolfskins. There were two of them here, both formidable men, though neither, she thought, as tall or broad as Eivind. Nessa stared back at Summerled, willing herself not to blush, not to lower her eyes in embarrassment or shame. She would not give him the satisfaction of that. His own eyes widened a touch as she stared steadily at him. His mouth twitched mischievously, as if he wanted her to share a private joke.
"The lady's name is Nessa,"
Brother Tighe told him direct, without translating what Somerled had said.
"I caution you against speaking out of turn here. Any sign of disrespect to her, the least ill word, will stir every man present to rage."
Somerled's dark gaze swiveled to the Christian.
"Well, well," he drawled in feigned amusement. "So fast the defense, so vehement. Are you not a priest and bound to chastity? I would swear you harbored a weakness for the lady yourself, so swiftly you spring to protect her. She is rather delectable, isn't she? I find that touch-me-not air quite irresistible." "I have warned you," Tighe said quietly. "Ignore it at your peril." "Ask the king if his daughter is promised in marriage."
Nessa froze. And now Angus had turned to his translator, demanding an explanation.
"What is he seeing? Why do you not translate these words? Did he speak of Nessa?"
Tighe cleared his throat. "I am not his daughter." Nessa's words came clear and confident in the tongue of the foreigners. "King Angus is my uncle. I think you know this already. And I am not promised, nor will I ever be. I am a priestess of the folk, and sworn to a life of solitude in observance of the rituals. My future will be in my own hands, not those of some man hungry for power." That last bit had been rather ill-advised. Still, she felt a certain satisfaction for having said it.
"My goodness," said Somerled,
his smile widening to something that seemed, for a fleeting moment, quite genuine, and not at all part of the game he played.
"Beautiful, untouchable, and clever as well. A voice like sweet music, and speaking in our own tongue. I'm impressed. I wish I'd met you earlier. Sworn to a life of solitude, you say? That's somewhat hard to believe."
"It is true." That would be the difficulty, she could see it. Not the times when he twisted and manipulated things, not the times when he was openly unpleasant, but those rare moments when one wondered if there might be a different person there, hidden somewhere deep. For a man like Eivind, that would be the hard part.
"I don't think so, sweetheart. Someone did tell me a little something about the female line and the need for an heir. Quite a desperate need in view of your people's recent losses. You may find your uncle has something different in mind for you, I think. Something a great deal more down to earth. That's a pity. Such a rare creature should not be wasted."
He glanced at Brother Tighe.
"Tell the king I, too, have come with a gift. A very special gift. I doubt if he has ever seen its like before."
Tighe translated, stony-faced. As he spoke, one of Somerled's warriors stepped forward with a roll of parchment, which he passed to his leader. It was fastened with a length of silken cord. Somerled's fingers moved deftly, untying the knot. He unrolled the document on the table before the king. The corners curled up. Somerled reached across to hold them down, and Nessa saw, clear and straight on the flesh of the left forearm, the mark of the knife, the pledge of a lifetime's loyalty. "He was my dearest friend." A shudder of disgust ran through her body. She caught his eyes sharp on her face, as if he knew what she was thinking. Nessa looked quickly back at the map, for that was what it was. A map of the islands, drawn neat and precise with quill and coloured inks, complete to the last line of cliffs, the last tiny rush-fringed lake, the last small clinging grove of prostrate trees. There was High Island. You could see the two great peaks. Even the giant hewn stone lay in its lonely vale. There was the southern coast of the Queen's Isle and Gartnet's Isle and Little Spear, and there the small oval of Holy Island, and a house marked with the sign of a cross.
This is a fine piece of work, Angus said slowly,
tracing the coastline with his hand.
Very fine. You have a skillful draftsman in your household. That is evident.
His fingers stopped. They rested against the northwest margin of the homeland, where a little circle showed offshore, with the tiny thread of ink joining it to the coast. The map was meticulous in every detail. Cliffs, bays, fishers, moorings, barns, settlements, storehouses, stone walls, fortifications, hiding places.
"What is written here?" asked the king.
Somerled gave a slow smile.
"Have you no men of learning here?" he asked softly. "Who can read the truth for you?" "It says Rossi, my lord king,"
Tyg said, looking at Somerled.
"That could be translated as Island of the Horse. This name is written across the whole of the northern part of this island. It encompasses the Whaleback and your own farms, and also the lands you granted to Ulf's people. It stretches as far south as the Safe Harbor and to Silver Bay in the east. The Great Stone Circle lies within this territory."
"I thought the name apt," said Somerled, unsmiling.
Angus rose slowly to his feet.
"What is this?"
he asked, and something in his voice made Nessa's heart lurch. There was a jingling, scraping sound in the hall as every fighting man put a hand to his weapon.
"My terms for peace," said Somerled smoothly. "You wanted a treaty, and that's exactly what I'm offering you. You need lose no more men. I can be magnanimous. I understand you have barely enough folk left to survive. This chart shows how it will be when we reach agreement. These islands are small. There simply isn't room for two leaders here."
Nessa could no longer hold her silence. It is outrageous. Her voice shook with fury. "It is an insult, a mockery which no true leader would suggest without deepest shame. You know what your brother wanted for the islands, for our own people and yours. How dare you bring this travesty of a bargain to the king? You disgust me." Somerled put his hands together. She thought he was on the verge of applauding her.
"Well done,"
he said, and he was not smiling now.
"Such passion, such fire, we must ensure that is not wasted. And such command of the language, too. I cannot imagine where you have practiced to become so fluent."
There was a question in his tone.
"She learned from me."
Brother Tyg spoke evenly. His eyes carried another message.
"And do not forget what I said before. There are those who will not accept lightly your veiled insults to this lady. Now I think you must explain clearly to King Angus what you intend by this, in plain words and to the point. There are angry folk here, my lord. I hope this does not mean what the Lady Nessa thinks."
"Don't try to play games with me, little priest," Somerled said. "Stick to your job, will you, and stop meddling. Now, my lord, it's only fair that I set this out clearly as I'm bid." "I see that. The fact is, I'm afraid your situation is very grave, King Angus. You saw the evidence of that at Ramsbeck. We have superior numbers of fighting men, greater skills on the field, more advanced weaponry. We have map-makers, we have scholars, we have strategists. What do you have? A handful of would-be warriors with ill-made spears and a whole lot of anger. Perhaps I need to make something else plain to you. Ulf is gone. I am not my brother. As chieftain, I've my own way of conducting my affairs. And in my vision for Rossi, there is no place for you."
White-faced, Tyg rendered the speech for the king. He softened it somewhat, to Nessa's great relief, for it seemed to her they were a hair's breadth from a bloody explosion of violence.
"Leave my hall."
Angus did not shout. He did not thump the table in his anger. He spoke the words with quiet dignity.
"Leave my hall, and leave my lands. I will hear no more.
I did say,
Somerled raised his hands in a gesture of helplessness.
I did say you need lose no men, or women, or children. If you won't listen, so be it.
He turned to go. The two wolfskins closed in at his sides.
Uncle, Nessa said urgently, you should hear him out. Whatever it is, perhaps it is better than a massacre.
There was silence.
Very well, Angus said heavily. Tell us, in this grand plan of yours, where are the folk? Where are we on these islands that have been our home since the time before memory?
Oh, you'd be gone.
Somerled's tone was light.
You and your son. I'd be very foolish to let you stay on as a rallying point for the shreds of your tribe, and I don't think I could send you off to these folk you call the Cat, either. Distant relatives, aren't they? There's always the possibility you might bring back unwelcome visitors. You would, however, make excellent hostages. Rogaland would be a good choice, far enough away and containing many folk with an interest in the opportunities this place can offer. Your people, you would take any fighting men with you into exile. We couldn't have them here. The boys could make themselves useful on the land. The women would stay. Their beds wouldn't be cold long. You see, it's a neat and simple solution, and not a drop of blood shed after today. Ulf would be proud of me.
Angus's face was like a carving in granite.
Your brother would turn in his grave if he could hear you today. He was a peacemaker. You are nothing but an opportunist upstart. Now get off my land and take your thugs with you. The sight of you turns my stomach.
Tig rendered these words very precisely. Somerled laughed.
Family habit, is it? Cheap insults. Oh, don't worry, we're going. I've no intention of being trapped here by the tide. I wouldn't answer for what might happen then. Your son is straining on the leash like a hunting dog. Oh, and that reminds me. Whose is that fine hound I saw outside the hall? It looks uncannily like one of my brother's pair, which went missing on the day of his funeral. I'm sure your people haven't added theft to their catalogue of misdeeds.
The dog is mine.
Nessa spoke as firmly as she could, though she was shaking with fury.
Really?
That little smile was flickering again.
I cannot argue with a lady. Keep him, by all means. Consider it a gift from an admirer. And, of course, I had forgotten something.
He turned back to Angus.
My generosity in sparing your life and those of your followers is dependent on one further condition.
Nessa felt the blood drain from her face.
I have need of an heir, and I am as yet unwed,
Somerled said smoothly.
I've heard this young lady is not yet promised. I want her hand in marriage. That should please you. It befits her status as a royal princess. Indeed, it's very neat. I rule the islands, the lady becomes a queen. In time, my son takes my place as leader here. And just think, the little fellow is the rightful heir under your own rules of succession as well. A king of the folk and Norse ruler of Rosi, all in one. Ingenious, though I say it myself.
Nessa stared, unable to speak her revulsion. Somerled was most certainly a quick thinker, a formidable opponent. Perhaps this had been part of the plan all along, and his words to her mere play-acting. Tide's hands were balled into angry fists. His translation of Somerled's speech was a masterpiece of tactful rewording, but he could not disguise the message.
You misjudge me badly,
Angus said quietly, casting a stern glance around his restless warriors.
My niece would not give such a proposal even a moment's consideration, and nor would a single one of our folk. This land has been in our custody since the time of the oldest ancestors. We will perish to the last man rather than sacrifice it. If you have chosen not to heed my warnings, let it be on your own head. Make war against us if you will, march through the secret places, set your boots on the bones of memory. We'll lay down our lives for the islands, every one of us. You are nothing, Somerled. You are a rat with ambitions, a runt who strives and strives to be his brother's equal, knowing he can never come close. Do you think the Lady Nessa would ever stoop to ally herself with such scum? You think I would condone that? I am king here, and these islands are my sacred trust. Now get yourself and your butchers off my lands, and never set foot on the whaleback again.
My lord says he scorns your offer. He will fight to the death sooner than accept, said Brother Tighe. And he asks that you leave now.
That much I worked out for myself, said Somerled. And a little more besides, for I too have a talent for languages. Please say to King Angus that I find his precipitate decision unfortunate, and that, being the thoughtful fellow that I am, I plan to give him time. Limited time. Winter is less than ideal for major battles, and the weather's so unreliable. Please tell the king I will hold off until we feel that first hint of spring warmth in the air. He'll know when. I'll send a messenger for an answer then. Goodbye, Nessa. I look forward to meeting you again, and getting to know you much better.
Nessa looked him straight in the eye, keeping her voice level at some cost. Most unlikely, I should think, she said. Of course, you will not accept my uncle's gift now. I'm sure you can see that would be entirely inappropriate. Somerled gave a wintry smile. The look in his eyes disturbed her deeply.
Put the spoons back, Erland, he said. As for our own gift, your uncle may keep that, Nessa. Let it not be said that Somerled of Rossi was a petty man. This map, I think, will serve as a reminder of the likely future if he remains obstinate on this issue. That would be foolish. Very foolish.
We have no more to say to you.
Angus's voice was that of a king.
Leave this hall, and leave this island. We shall not meet again, save on the field of war.
I wish you could understand me, Mother, Nessa whispered, pulling her bone needle through the hem of the skirt she was mending, and fastening off the thread. They were sitting outside, the two of them together on a stone bench, for it was one of those winter days when the sun decides to show himself for all the chill, in order to remind folk that he has not quite forgotten them. Nessa ran the cloth through her fingers, searching for the other place where the garment was worn to holes. There it was. A thorough darning would be needed if she were to get more wear out of this. Once, Mother would have taken the work from her hands with a smile, and done it herself, reminding Nessa that she was a priestess. Not now. Mother sat with hands in lap, eyes watery, mouth slightly open. She did not seem to look or listen any more, though sometimes she spoke. Words not even Nessa could interpret. It was hard to see your own mother as a kind of idiot, a madwoman. It was impossible to believe that not two seasons had passed since the time before the sickness, the time when Nessa's sisters had giggled gossip and plaited her hair, and her mother had been so strong, so loving, the sort of mother you could tell all your secrets to. I wish I could ask your advice, Nessa went on. What if you know someone has done a bad thing, a cruel thing, and yet your heart tells you that he is a fine, good man? Do you think it makes a difference if someone does ill, believing it is right? Can his misdeeds be forgiven if they are done in ignorance? Mother gave a little cough and muttered something. Perhaps she said water. Nessa put down her sewing and fetched a cup. Mother's features were quite vacant. She made no attempt to take it. Nessa held the cup to her mother's lips and waited for her to sip. It was like tending to a dying child, futile and heartbreaking.
Mother? I wonder if you can hear me, somewhere deep down. What do you think? Am I being really foolish? How can a good, kind man stay loyal to a heartless tyrant? Why is it the signs tell me I'm right when it seems so wrong to care like this? I ran away. I turned my back on a friend. I've never done that before. Mother, please talk to me. Oh, please. All I want is a word, just one little word. Just a hint in your eyes that you are there somewhere. I'm so lonely here now.
Stop this, Nessa, she told herself as tears threatened to spill. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. What about Mother? How hard is this for her? What about Eivind, whom you abandoned? What about poor Rona?
If you want answers, find them yourself.
She glanced down the slope of the whaleback to the eastern sward, where Kinnard and the other men were taking advantage of the fine weather to practice swordplay. Thrust, block, duck, turn, thrust again. To her untutored eyes, it looked quite expert. She imagined Eivind there among them. He would be taller and broader by far than the biggest of Angus's men, and probably a good deal more skilled. Kinnart was holding his sword as if he fought demons. He was consumed with anger. They all were. When the time came at last for them to face Somerled's men, they would see nothing but the broken bodies of Ramsbeck, the burned-out remains of Ara's cottage. They would charge into the fray with that before their eyes. Their fury would make them blind, and Somerled's men would cut them down like ripe grain. Her uncle would be banished, her kin enslaved. A tyrant would rule the Light Isles, and she herself would be... She shuddered, unable to envisage a future in which she lay by that man's side. And yet there was a choice in it. Agree to marry Somerled and bear his son, and she could save the folk from annihilation. Wed Somerled, and she would be disobeying the wisdom of the ancestors, the knowledge that ran deep in the blood. A dark choice. An impossible choice. Kinnart and Ferach were locked in close combat now. Their fierce dedication to rehearsing the dances of war was driving them hard. The memory of Ramsbeck tormented them like a bloody goad. Eivind, too, had seen his friend slain, Hawken, who had been a wolfskin, and those Hawken had cherished. He had thought her own folk responsible. Was it the same for Eivind, as he urged his warriors to the attack at Ramsbeck, as he sent his axe through the air in a glittering dance of death? Had he felt the same rage? She watched as Kinnart put aside his sword and began to rehearse spear thrusts, eyes savage, mouth tight. Perhaps there was not such a difference between them. Perhaps it only had to do with what you believed in. She stood by the kinstone, watching a blood-red sun sink into the dark turmoil of the western sea. The air was damp with fine salt spray. Over the final rise of the whaleback's tilting surface, cliffs fell sharply, and unseen waves smashed their base far below. Only a fool or a madman would walk too close. Even the sheep knew to keep away. Angus stood by her side, eyes fixed on that far horizon, the end of the world, maybe. The dog sniffed about, scenting rabbits. The sun was almost gone. So soon. Too soon. At this time of year, all longed for spring. It was hard to keep the heart light, the spirit hopeful, when night laid its blanket so heavily over the land. In the brief time of daylight, all must be done, hunting, fishing, tending stock, mending storm-damaged houses, the movement of sentries, the strengthening of what small defences they had. The last glow of the setting sun fell on the carven stone, illuminating the three warriors who strode with dignity and purpose across its face, guardians, keepers, defenders of the islands. The kinstone had stood here long. It was the marker and center of the realm of the folk. Yet on the islands it was young. The stone circles, the hidden chambers, the ancient mounds, the unseen folk who dwelt, mysterious and subtle, within the folds of earth, beneath the shining water, these were memory and magic, heartbeat and history. These had been a part of the Light Isles since a time so distant a man's mind could hardly encompass it. They would endure whatever came.
For the folk, the future seemed much less certain. It is unthinkable, Angus said to his niece, that a man such as Somerled could rule here, unendurable. And yes, I can see how it could come to pass. That would be the end of our people, Nessa. This is a cruel race of men, heartless and ignorant. I made a grave error in letting them stay. I judged them all by Ulf's measure. It seems to me now that he was a rare breed among them. If this is the end, it rests on my shoulders. I had not thought to see such a dark day come to us. I had not thought to bear such a burden.
Uncle?
Yes, Nessa.
About Ulf, his death, the manner of it, and your investigations? It is clear none of our own men was involved. Have you a theory to explain what happened that day? Who do you think did it? It was that death which turned things around. But for that, perhaps your treaty would have held, and the two peoples lived side by side, as Ulf planned.
Theory, Angus said, glancing at her. Oh yes, I have a theory all right. Not that it matters, since this fine new chieftain seems to have his people eating out of his hand. Even if there was evidence to support it, I doubt that it would make a jot of difference. This is a subtle opponent, Nessa, as clever as he is evil.
I'm right then, she said quietly. You think Somerled himself was responsible?
Perhaps he did not perform the deed, but I believe he arranged it. He was missing that night, and half the next day. He turned up unhurt, speaking of voices in the darkness and mysterious lights. The men who were with him told much the same tale. Brood was led astray by these manifestations all night, until sleep cleaned him at last. He awoke far away from a campsite, when the sun was already high in the sky. As for Drest, the voices led him up the crag, where he was set upon by, he thinks, the hidden tribe. It was dark. He could not discern if they were men or something other than men. He was lucky to escape with a broken leg. The question is, where was Somerled during that time? He claims he too wandered lost. But he had men there in the valley and back at the anchorage. My guard could not watch them all. Somerled's own henchmen could have come to help him. That cruel murder was not a task for one man alone. His hand was on it, Nessa.
But why? His own brother? That is against all natural laws. And Ulf was a good man. Surely Somerled would not have done such an evil deed in order to take his brother's place here as chieftain. How could any man live with the guilt of that?
This is not a man like other men, Angus said heavily. This is a man driven by some kind of darkness, and I think it is not as chieftain he sees himself, but as king. That is why a treaty now is out of the question. One does not make agreements with such as he is, and yet, to do so may be our only hope of survival. Brother Tighe knows more of this man. Tighe spoke long to Ulf on Holy Island. He was privy to the secrets of Ulf's heart. But he will not tell of these things. A holy brother cannot. That is regrettable. Such knowledge could help us.
The sun was quite gone now. They must head back to the settlement before all was ink dark. There are other ways, Nessa said slowly. Other paths to follow, which may lead to answers. I could do it for you, with Rona to help. I would not relish such a task, but these are desperate times, Uncle.
I don't want you going back to the women's place.
Angus's voice was stern.
You saw the fellow. You heard his outrageous suggestion. You saw those oafs in their barbarous cloaks. The only place we can keep you safe is here on the whaleback, Nessa. And even that may not be safe enough. If it were not the dark season, I would send you away. There are folk in the Northern Isles would shelter you till this is over. You are too precious to be put at risk. Could you not perform this ritual here, summon the voice you need? We should fetch Rona at any rate. She is in danger if she remains in the place of ritual alone. The secrets of the spirit will mean nothing to Somerled's thugs.
They began to walk down toward the settlement, where torches flared in the chill wind outside the hall. Uncle?
What is it, Nessa?
This ritual. I cannot tell you what it is, but it must be done there, in the women's place. The voice I must summon is a very old one, a dark one. There is only one chamber where I might hear her, and that is not on the whaleback. I must return there if you want your answers. I am safe. I travel under the protection of the ancestors. The king walked on in silence for a little.
Only between tides, then, and you must take Kinnart and another man with you, so they can watch both sides of the woman's place. I am uneasy, Nessa. I saw the look in that man's eye. If he cannot have you by fair means, he will not hesitate to use foul.
It can't be done by daylight, Uncle. I must be there overnight. Kinnart can take me there and come back for me. I don't want him to keep vigil in the dark.
I don't like this. I should have seen this coming. I should have sent you away before winter.
I will go tomorrow and come back the next day. Uncle, I must ask a question.
Angus sighed and stopped walking. It seemed to Nessa her uncle's broad shoulders were stooped, as if the weight of cares he bore were making him old before his time.
You need not ask, he said gravely. I understand what is troubling you. Nessa, how can the folk survive without a king? How can they cling to hope after so many losses, unless the royal line has an heir?
Nessa found it difficult to speak. How can they go on without a priestess of the mysteries? She said tightly. Without a wise woman, the folk cannot hear the voice of the ancestors. Without that guidance, we would indeed lose our way.
A cruel choice, Angus said. But Rona still lives. And there are girls here who could learn. You could teach and still bear a child for us. You are the last one, my dear.
Then why not marry me off to Somerled and have done with it? Nessa could not restrain the bitter words.
That way at least a remnant of our people survives. Never mind my 10 years of dedication and study, the calling of my heart and spirit. You heard his plan. My child would still be the next king of the Light Isles, Somerled's child.
Angus put his arm around her shoulders, a rare gesture, for he was not a man given to the open expression of affection.
Impossible, he said quietly. Unthinkable. And the decision must be yours in the end. In that, I do recognize what you are and what you've accomplished. I know that whatever hangs in the balance, you will never ally yourself with that man. A princess may wed outside the folk. It has been done before. Men of Dal Riada have fathered our kings, men of Northumbria, and chieftains of the Cat. The father of a future king is chosen not just for the alliances he carries with him, but for his courage, his good humour, his soundness of spirit. That is how we keep our line strong. I had hoped for time to find a mate for you, one acceptable both to the folk and to yourself. But I would never wed you to a man such as Somerled. As for the need to tend to the mysteries, I respect that. But I ask you to ponder what I have said. You are a wise woman, and you will choose wisely in this, as in all other things, Nessa. I understand how hard it is. Duty calls you both ways, and this troubles you deeply. I, too, have had sleepless nights. Let us hope your ritual sheds light on these matters for us, for we have sore need of it. Now come, we must go indoors and see if your mother has improved after her rest. I have hopes the spring may bring my sister back to herself.
I will find Kinnart, Nessa said. 2 days, 1 night, Uncle.
and I'll try to bring Rona back with me. But I don't think she'll come.
She always was a stubborn old woman, said Angus.
Of course by now he will be long gone, thought Nessa, as she went southward on the path through the dunes under heavy skies. The dog kept steady pace, ears alert, feet padding silently on the sandy track. The moon has run her course nearly twice since I left him, and winter moves on apace. He will have fled away. Perhaps he has gone back to Somerled, back to his dearest friend.
I hope they come, growled Kinnart to his companion, Feach. I hope they come when we are on guard. I will split their bodies like pigs on a spit. I will crush their thick skulls like lumps of clay. I will account for everyone if they dare set foot near the sacred place.
Perhaps he is quite well again, and in that man's hall preparing for battle. Maybe even now he sharpens the war axe, makes bright the longsword. Perhaps he lifts that shield he spoke of, and ponders the marks he made there, a long record of heedless killings. I hope that Rona is safe. A warrior whose ears are open to Thor's call does not see an old woman's frailty. I trusted him. Perhaps I was foolish. Did he learn where the difference lies, that in taking a life one must understand what life is worth? Did he ever understand what a precious gift it is?
You speak no more than my own thoughts, Kinnart. My dagger cries out to taste their flesh. Let them come on. We'll give them a dose of their own treatment, a little surprise.
Perhaps he died alone, out on the hills. Perhaps the tide carries his body even now, dark weed, bright hair drifting on the swell. But this is foolish. It is not for him that I return to the woman's place. It is for the calling. And the calling will take all my strength. Into the darkness, into the hidden places. That is a journey to test the most dauntless spirit. I must think of that. I will not think of him.
It is hard to wait until spring,
Kinnart said as they neared the place where the two men must halt and let Nessa go on alone.
Father holds us back when our bellies hunger for vengeance. If I were in charge, I would make an army of my own. I would take the fight to Somerled's door. While we hold back, while we wait, he strengthens his force, he tightens his grip. We should act now. I tell you, the first sight I catch of one of those butchers, there'll be no stopping me.
Kinnart, you must leave now, Nessa said. There's no need to wait. The day moves on swiftly, and the time of darkness is long and cold. You should go home while tide and light allow it, and come back for me tomorrow.
Kinnart's mouth was grim. He showed no sign of moving.
Not this time. I'll keep watch on the shore. Feach will stay up here on the eastern side by the dike. And when you come out, bring Rona with you. That's what the king wants.
Nessa sighed. For all he was a year older than herself, sometimes this manly young warrior still showed he was a boy. She shivered as a wave of cold, a shadow of something not quite seen, passed over her.
I know what the king wants, Kinnart. I don't need you to tell me. If you must stay, stay then, but keep your distance. Do not be alarmed if there are voices and lights from the women's police. I am here to conduct a deep ritual tonight. I may awaken forces thus far unknown to us. Rona will help and guide me. I will not come forth until low tide tomorrow afternoon, and for the whole of that time we must not be disturbed. This is an ancient rite. If it is to be attempted, it's important that you heed my instructions. Kinnart nodded, his features somber.
If it helps us win our war and drive these barbarians from our shores, a night standing out in the cold is a small price to pay, he said. What about the hidden tribe?
Feach sounded less confident. Tonight you stand guard over the island's oldest mysteries, Nessa told him with a little smile. I doubt if the hidden tribe will bother you. They are fond of tricks, but they are an ancient people. And their blood flows to the rhythm of the islands, as ours does. That makes them akin to us in such times of trial. Do not fear them. If you see strange lights or hear songs or cries, look away and think of mourning.
I hope you're wearing your moon charms. Both young men nodded, hands moving instinctively to the leather strips that held these amulets around their necks. Every child on the islands was given a tiny bag of soft leather, holding round white pebbles, 3 or 5 or 7 in number. Moon charms provided infallible protection against the more mischievous local spirits. Even Nessa, priestess as she was, wore such a talisman.
Then you will surely be safe. Goodbye now. I'll see you at low tide tomorrow. Do not call me. I will come out when it's time.
The last thing she expected to see as she came down the bank into the woman's place was a girl. The girl was young, perhaps 14, with a pleasant, nervous face and wispy fair hair. She wore a long, coarse cape with a little hood and sturdy boots. She was one of them, one of Somerled's people. The girl stood helplessly before the cottage as Rona berated her in words she could not understand.
There's no point coming in here if you can't make yourself understood. This is a sacred place, a forbidden place. Your kind are not welcome here. Now be off with you.
I only want... My lady wants... I cannot go back unless...
The girl's voice shook nervously. She twisted her hands together.
What is this nonsense? Don't you know I can't make sense of a word you're saying? Get out of here before I put a hex on you and turn you into a beetle.
Rona's mouth curved in a ferocious grimace, revealing her gapped and darkened teeth. The girl flinched but held her ground. Nessa gave a small polite cough. I'll deal with this, Rona, she said quietly, coming across to set her bag by the cottage doorway and give the old woman a kiss on the cheek. The dog had slipped away to the tower in the earth, perhaps searching for its mate. There was no sign of Avond. It looked as if she'd been right.
She won't go when she's bidden, Rona grumbled. Wants something but can't tell me what. Must want it badly. It's a long way to come, and she's where she shouldn't be.
I'll talk to her, Nessa said. Why don't you go inside and get warm?
You're welcome to her, Rona muttered. Waifs and strays, more trouble than they're worth if you ask me. You'll be wanting a cup of tea, I expect, after that walk. This wind's enough to freeze the marrow in your bones.
She disappeared inside the cottage. Nessa turned to the girl, speaking in the tongue of Avon's people.
You have come into a forbidden place, she said. Perhaps you didn't know that. Your people are not welcome on our land. Why have you come here? What do you want?
I heard, my lady heard, that there was a wise woman here,
the girl managed, her voice breathless with anxiety.
I only wanted... They say she can cast spells, make potions. I only wanted...
You need some help. A faithless lover, a cruel master. We do not provide such easy solutions here. We do not deal in quick remedies and instant cures.
They said the wise woman...
The girl glanced at the cottage door. Clanking noises from within told Nessa that Rona was setting water to heat in the iron pot. The smell of herbs wafted out on the cold air.
Is she making a spell?
The girl whispered, eyes fearful.
Quite possibly, Nessa said. Now listen to me. I too am a wise woman, and I have little time for this. Tell me plainly what you want. This is a woman's place, and you are a woman, though you are not of our kind. I will help you if I can.
I want... What you said, a faithless lover, something like that... A filter, a remedy, to make him turn back. That is what she asked me to say.
If this was supposed to be an attempt to disguise the nature of the request, it had failed miserably. This girl had no more subtlety than a chicken.
This lover. Your sweetheart? Your husband?
Yes. No, I mean...
Nessa regarded her a moment in silence. Whoever had set this on her had been less than fair to her.
I'm afraid I cannot help, she said. You see, if it were for yourself, I might be able to give you something to use, though I would warn against such charms. They are effective, certainly, yet in the long run they do more harm than good. But it's clear to me what you want is not for yourself, but for another. Your mistress, I assume.